This is episode 88 of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. 88 episodes have been so incredible of this amazing podcast, and I'm so grateful to have had you join me in this journey. I know I mentioned in the last episode that I will be retiring this podcast. Well, that might not be exactly the truth, because I've decided to take this podcast in a new direction. The Home and Family Culture Podcast will now be publishing as live interviews on my Facebook profile. And in the future, I'll be moving those into my Facebook private group. But for now, I want to be publishing them on my Facebook profile. And so if you are my friend or you're following me on Facebook, you will see these episodes recorded live in Facebook without edits, without anything. It's going to just be raw and unplugged on my Facebook profile. Then if you don't follow me on Facebook, these episodes will be published later in the following week of the recording that I did live on Facebook. So be sure to come follow me on Facebook. It's just facebook.com/Jody Chafee. That's Jody with an I, two F's and two E's in Chafee. And you will find those recordings or those live broadcasts on Friday afternoons as I get guests coming in. And so that's what I'm going to be doing from now on. So I won't be retiring this podcast after all. I just am going to be taking it in a new direction. This way I will have amazing content for you, and it's a little bit less work for me because I won't be editing. It's going to be totally raw and unplugged for you. So go look for those on Facebook at facebook.com/Jody Chafee, and come follow me on Facebook at Family Culture Podcast, and on Instagram also at Family Culture Podcast.
Today on the podcast, I've got Dina Alexander. She is the founder and president of Educate and Empower Kids, an organization determined to strengthen families by teaching digital citizenship, media literacy, and healthy sexuality education, including education about the dangers of online porn. She is the creator of Noah's New Phone, a story about using technology for good, Messages About Me, a journey to healthy body image, and How to Talk to Your Kids About Pornography. And there's a bunch of others too now. Is there 30 Days of Sex Talks with Your Kids and 30 Days to a Stronger Child? And then there's the other one that's like most recent, right, is Conversations with My Kids, 30 Essential Family Discussions for the Digital Age. So these are all like really essential, very relevant books that we need to talk about with our kids. She received her master's degree in recreation therapy from the University of Utah and her bachelor's degree from Brigham Young University. She is an amazing mom and loves spending time with her husband and three kids. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm excited to talk about this because I think that media literacy and, you know, understanding the importance of the digital influence over our children is so important. And I think more and more our kids are consuming more and more digital content. And so it's so crucial for our kids to be aware of the messages that they're being sent in the media. And because I think that marketers and creators are very crafted in generating messages to try to get us, to distract us, to entertain us, but also sometimes even to send messages that maybe, I don't know what their motivation is for creating these messages. I mean, I think some of it is to get us addicted to their content. Some of it is to maybe teach us some principles. Certainly there is a positive side of that, like PBS, you know, things that are teaching our kids about education and literacy and those kinds of things. Those messages and content are obviously uplifting, but there's also a lot of content that subtly is teaching our kids principles that maybe we don't agree with, but we don't even realize it because it's so mainstream.
Yeah, we get so distracted. And this is all of us. You know, a lot of us like to try to say that advertising doesn't influence us, or I'm above it, or I'm over that. You know, here I'm 42 and I think of all the messages that I've seen throughout my life. And no, our brains are sometimes a bit like cavemen. And so for us, for any of us to think that we are not being influenced by media and media messages, you're kidding yourself. Instead of thinking about, you know, what's really important, and that is the genius of marketers, and that is the genius of some of these content creators when it comes to not just kid content, but adult content, of really swaying us, of changing our views, changing our opinions, even changing our values. And for us to, for us to think that we're not influenced is ridiculous, but we need to be hyper aware of what it does for our kids' undeveloped brains.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I'm actually going through like marketing training and stuff like that right now to help with my business. And there is a whole training about marketers are like drug dealers because they want to, basically they create distraction and they create, you know, feeling of status and inclusion and belonging through their content. And it stimulates the hormones in our brains that are basically drugs in our brains, you know, dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, and endorphins with the content that they're creating, which is creating addiction, first of all. And then the content itself, like you said, it's teaching us messages. Just but going back to this idea of the brains and even the way that it's manipulating our hormones, and it's also manipulating the development of our brains. I read an article that kids are becoming more sensory motor sensitive, and it's being linked to more screen time, you know, because that's such a sensory thing coming into their brains and overstimulating our brains. And adults, we're dealing with that too, because we're allowing ourselves to get overstimulated, not recovering from our stress and anything like that. It's interesting though. So what else do you know of that, of, you know, the stimulation and the sensory motor things and the way that this media is impacting our kids?
As far as the brain development and what it does, I totally agree. There's a lot of great TED Talks. There's a lot of great research out there that we'll talk about. Because I think for a lot of years, we thought we were being distracted and that we had distracted thinking, you know, turning off a screen and then going right to bed, those kinds of things that we've kind of were learning, hey, we need to shut off screens. But like you said, we're now learning that it's more that we are overstimulated. And because of that, you know, I think of when it comes to my kids, so my kids are now 18, 16, and 13. And so as I've been researching and, you know, doing Educate and Empower Kids for almost 6 years now, watching the changes in them, but also watching the changes in their peers. And it's fascinating and it's a little scary. And it's a little sad to see, again, how the lack of concentration, the difficulty our kids have in just doing one project while they're doing homework. Oh, they get an Instagram notification or somebody sends them a funny video. Somebody does, you know, they text them, and how it's not just kids, this is adults too, of how we are not able to focus in like we ought to, right? And I think of, what are we missing? What is the actual brain development that is not happening because we are allowing so many things to pull us in so many different directions? Even if it's just a simple television show, they are far more exciting, far more stimulating than what you and I had, right? So then we have that. Compare and think in your head, compare an episode of Mr. Rogers to a children's show, to Team Umi, to Team Umi Zumi or something like that. It is like a roller coaster. It's like being on a carousel versus going on a roller coaster. Those are going to do different things to your brain. Maybe there's a good place for that sometimes. Maybe we need that. You know, I think of like an exercise. You know, you need cardio and you need weightlifting and you need yoga, right? It's not just about strength. It's not just about flexibility. It's not just about getting your heart rate up. It's about all of those things. So hopefully we are providing things in our home where we're having screen time, where we're turning off screens. We're allowing our kids to get bored and do something creative where they have to think about something, maybe where they're going outside, whether you have a tiny backyard or a big backyard or no backyard, that you're allowing your kids to have that time away from that stimulation of where they are going to be creating these things on their own, where they're reading a story and allowing their imagination to flow, where they're writing a story, especially in the summertime. I hope we're using this time for great discussions about silly things, about important things, where we're just drawing, where our kids are doodling, whatever, these things that are simple, but actually have such a huge and powerful impact in a positive way on our kids' brains.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you suggested other alternatives, because I think sometimes parents go, what do I do when my kid gets bored? And it's like on us as parents, we get tempted to just be like, fine, just watch the show or whatever.
Yeah,
fine,
no, it's like it's like when I'm at the grocery store, your kids, and I'm not going to say for everybody, because yeah, there are kids that are on the spectrum where a screen does provide certain things for them. And I'm not going to judge all parents, but I would say 90 to 95% of us, our kids don't need a screen while we're at the grocery store. It's okay for them to act up. It's okay for them to be bored in the shopping cart and for them to whine or even cry. Go ahead. It's okay to disturb the other shoppers. Disturb us. It's okay. That's humanity. That's normal. That's life. Let your kids get excited, you know, hold a box of crackers. I don't care, whatever. Please don't, you know, on these errands, like avoid screens as much as possible. Let your kids experience life, including boredom, including looking in the faces of people around them, knowing their environment. They don't need to be on a screen, please, you know, as much as possible. Just these, on these little occasions where I see people, I'm like, there's no reason for that. Even, you know, as we travel, my kids did not have any screens. I traveled with all three kids by myself in an airplane. And no, none of them are on the spectrum. So again, if you have kids on the spectrum, I know you have a different set of rules you need to. But most of us can go through an entire plane trip without a screen. This can actually happen. Let your kids get bored. Let them read a book. It's okay for them to fuss. It's okay. Like, as much as possible. Yeah, there's going to be a time where you're at your wit's end, then go ahead. But that shouldn't be every day.
Yeah. So, it should be your first go-to thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and there's like, I will say this, there is a transition though. When you make the commitment to set that boundary to say, okay, we are not going to hand you a screen at the first sign of struggle. Okay. Or if you say you were going to set this boundary, we are not allowed to have a screen at the grocery store. There is going to be a transition period where you're going to be like, this is torture.
but it is going to be less painful than you think, because yeah. I've made different transitions throughout my life. So my kids, you know, luckily I did not have a smartphone when my kids were little. It was never a temptation. But I remember when they were in elementary school, when I made the rule, I just felt like they were watching too much TV. And I said, we are no longer, you guys now have to read for 30 minutes if you want 30 minutes of television. I expected anarchy in my home. I think I had a third grader, a first grader, and a preschooler. And I remember thinking, okay, this is going to be rough. I did not get one complaint from them. It just happened. Now, sometimes they would read for 30 minutes and then watch TV for an hour, right? And we would have to rein that in, and that would come and go. And I had a preschooler who wasn't reading yet. I was like, okay, then you need to draw something, I would tell him, or you need to just look at a picture book for 30 minutes. And I would sit there with him and do that. He was fine playing toys without watching like that was just that child, you know? But again, I was expecting it to be way harder than it actually was. And so again, I think when you make the commitment, you find the ways to do it. Going to be perfect ever. So don't expect that, but just
no. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that when you establish those boundaries, it's amazing how creative everybody gets. Like even as a parent, we get more creative about things. And then the kids, oh, suddenly they get creative and they realize, oh, there's more. But the longer you do that, the easier that becomes, I think, you know, as you, and then, like you said, having an alternative so that it's not just turn off the screen, but, oh, here's other options. Go outside, read a book, color, do a project, play with Legos, whatever it is. So that's a good idea to have that alternative strategy. So I want to talk more about this whole idea too of media literacy and like recognizing messages that may be or may not be intended to be destructive or intended to be a message that is just sending the wrong messages to our kids. I mean, a lot of media is definitely over-sexualized, which is a big deal. Where do you see is the media that is most heinous? What are the things we need to be most aware of?
First, I think we need to understand that all advertising and all media is selling more than products. And even entertainment media is doing more than entertaining. So what is going on in every media message? Let's talk just about advertising real briefly. First, it's selling more than a product. When I'm selling an advertisement for a lipstick, is selling values. It is selling so many different messages. That's why girls typically from an early age, before they can even read, before they sometimes can even speak, we are getting that message that beauty is the most important thing. So right there, that is a value. It is a false value. It is a disgusting value, but that is a value that is thrust on all of us from a very young age, that the most important thing in the world is not our intelligence, is not our level of kindness and empathy, but it is our looks. So we have to remember that, especially as we are raising our kids, to think about that. Okay, so every television show, I have to think about, what is the point of this? What is the value? Like, why am I going to allow my child to watch that? Okay, it's a show on animals. Okay, they're going to be, this is an educational experience. We're going to watch Blue Planet or whatever. That is, it's easier to break down, right? That again is also why it's a better level of stimulation, because it's not so overstimulating, right? It's pretty clear and simple. It's not a drama with a parent and a child fighting and the husband cheating and the wife checked out with her wine at night. So again, that's where you start having all these different layers and where you as a parent have to be a critical thinker and mm-hmm. teaching our kids to be critical thinkers. We have to first understand what our kids are up against from that young age, that they are being sold to. Every television show, even if it's something positive, like I think of, you know, the Disney Channel or Nick Jr., whatever one of my kids used to watch, there was a lot of positive shows, but there was still advertising and they still wanted advertising dollars from us. There were toys to go along with those shows. There were other shows that they wanted you to watch as well. There were other products, whether that was a SpongeBob toothbrush or, you know, a Blue's Clues. This is how old I am. You can tell. You get a Blue's Clues plush pillow at the store, whatever, right? They still had an agenda. And so first understanding, okay, that's why our kids are not just whiners. They are just responding to the constant advertising and selling going on to them. So first understanding that, and then understanding that they're being put against an impossible standard, especially our girls. Our boys are getting it too now. It used to not really be that much for boys, but it is now, where they are being told beauty is the most important thing, that also you're never going to achieve it. So you need to spend all your time and especially your money on achieving things that you're not going to be able to. I mean, even in television shows, everything is beautifully decorated, that mm-hmm. it has this lifestyle, this set of values that most of us cannot achieve. But we're being told, this is what you need to look like. This is the lifestyle you need to have. This is the way you need to behave. When you're husband does this, then you need to lash out at him, right? Or if your mom does this, then you need to give her some attitude, because that is what is going on. I remember at least my kids, when they would watch these Disney shows, there was always some kid with this massive attitude problem. I don't know if that's how Disney is still. We don't have TV anymore.
We don't watch it anymore because so many of the shows were like that. It was like the parents are always either non-existent or they're the bad guy. Like they're stupid. Yeah, exactly.
Or they're straight up stupid, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to, again, I'm like, there's many times when my kids were younger, particularly, we'd be watching a movie and I would pause it and they would look at me because they were right in the middle of the drama of it. And I would pause it and I would say, do you guys understand what's going on here? And they would look at me sometimes like, would you please stop? I didn't care. To me, this is a perfect educational experience. I wanted to be like, do you understand why this person is saying that? Is that really what happens in real life? Would I ever say that to your dad, or would your dad ever say that to me? What would go on in our marriage if we spoke to each other like that? That we would kind of, again, take these opportunities. So I would recommend doing that in an advertisement, right? Whether you're mm-hmm. walking through a mall, whether you're driving and you see a billboard and your kids recognize it, especially if you're in one of these areas like Salt Lake City, where there's a million advertisements for boob jobs and laser treatments. I mean, I want you to know, if you are living in Salt Lake and you have need of a laser, they've got you covered up there. I have never seen so many I travel all over the country and I've never seen so many advertisements for various laser opportunities. Instead of just, you know, having your kids look away when they walk past Victoria's Secret, if they're older and they can understand, hey, they're looking for one thing, mm-hmm. but for two, point out how fake it is. Let them know that this is not how real women look. Ask why they have chosen to show a woman who has no lines on her face when every woman they know has lines on her face. Ask her why they've neglected to leave her pores on her face. Why is she not allowed to have pores? Why does she have to be so impossibly thin with boobs that are probably not her real boobs? And ask why is that? And that why is that women have to have this impossible standard? Or pass by a store where a man is being objectified and ask your sons and daughters the same thing. Now, I'm not saying to do this with your 3 and 4 year olds because they're not going to get it. But by 7, 8, 9, 10, they get it. They see it. The pressure is on them. They understand that this is what is going on. So that to me is a small piece of media literacy that we can do to start out simply.
Everything is so hyper-focused on appearance. I mean, that is like the quickest way to get people's attention. It's the quickest way to help make people feel ashamed so they feel like they need that thing. I mean, that's the thing about media, is that it is almost designed to make us feel like our reality is not good enough.
No, that is exactly what it
is. Exactly.
It is. And it is intentional. You have to realize it is 100% intentional. And I'm always more upset that women will do this to other women. And I don't know why I expect more from women. I really should just stop. But that we will sell each other out like that. You know, I used to be mad at fashion magazines because they used to be mostly run by men. I don't know if you realize that. Now they're mostly run by women. And to me, they're just selling each other, just selling us out by saying, like, if you don't look like this, you're ugly. It is a message of shame. It is a message of, you don't look like this and you need to. And if you don't look like this, there's something wrong with you. It's meant for us that we feel like we have to go out and buy that purse, or that we need that makeup to look younger, that we need that lip color, that we need our hair to be fuller, shinier. And we're looking at an advertisement of somebody whose hair isn't even that shiny. It's impossible to look that shiny. It has been touched up by a computer. But again, we're being told you need to look like this. And again, all of us are affected. I know media experts who say that they will still, so there are people that know it, they knowledgeably, their brain knows that this is a fake image, but they still, that little voice in their head still tells them, oh, you're not as thin, or, oh, don't you wish you could look like that? Or, oh, I'll never look like that. Or I'll never be blonde like that. Or I'll never have that body. Those little voices still sink in to everybody, to every adult woman, particularly of any age, that those affect us.
Yeah. Well, and to acknowledge too, the ripple effects that that has, that it's not just about our self-esteem or anything like that. It's like people develop eating disorders and financial problems and relationship problems around the way that we perceive ourselves based around when we compare ourselves to these media.
Yeah, it's estimated that 1 in 5 women have disordered eating, or have an eating disorder, excuse me, like a classic eating disorder. But right. I would say it's 1 in 4 at least has some form of disordered eating.
Right.
Whether that's starving yourself, whether that is binging all the time to release stress, whatever. A lot of us have disordered eating, and that is definitely influenced by media. Again, we think about it for ourselves as adults. We have got to think about that in terms of what that means for our kids, and especially now in this digital age, we've got to be thinking about it in terms of social media, because now we are the advertisers and we have to be very cognizant of the message we are sharing, especially if we are friends with teenagers, if we're friends with anybody younger. I really hope that we are being authentic, that we're sharing our true selves, that we're not just sharing curated perfection of our lives, but that also means that we need to be on top of what's going on in our kids' social media consumption. One, I hope you are holding off on social media as long as possible and not giving your kids social media in middle school. I would recommend waiting until junior, senior year of high school. And I know that sounds super late, but I'm learning that from giving my daughter social media too young. And I hope you're going to learn from my mistakes. Hold off as long as possible. They do need to have it before they leave your house. But you should take a minute every day if possible, but at least a couple times a week, to just scroll through what your child is looking at, to see what other teenagers, what the message they're selling to your kids and the message that your kid is selling. Because we're all selling something on social media. Please be brave enough to admit that we are all selling a message on social media, and to just understand that and to really put yourself in your child's shoes as you scroll through and see the different messages. Now, they're of course going to object to that, and you're not spying. This is just getting a feel for their life, for the wallpaper of their lives. And it will be extremely eye-opening, and you will see differences year to year as your daughter's friends start self-objectifying and sexualizing themselves, as the boys start sometimes being inappropriate. Sometimes they're still, you'll have those rare gems. You'll have kids that you'll be proud of what they put, but they are standing up for good things, that they're funny, that they're witty, but you will also see the negativity that is coming from this world that our kids are living in.
Wow. I'm so glad you said that, because when you were talking about like the TV shows and watching a movie and pausing it every whatever, that I'm just like, my perspective is, let's just not watch it then. Let's just turn it off. But A, that's not necessarily practical or ideal for everybody. And B, there's still other media that you just cannot turn off. You just can't turn it off. And I like, number one, that you said, don't make them look away and shame them or make it taboo when they see things. Talk about it so that they get that literacy, that understanding. They become, you know, aware of what's going on. And also put out positive, uplifting media. Like you said, we are selling, everybody's selling something. So I like those two messages, those two strategies for incorporating a positive experience with media in our family culture, because A, you can't avoid it.
And anymore. I'm not saying like every time you pass by Victoria's Secret to tell your kids
right.
to look. I'm saying when you start noticing that they're noticing, then it's time to go ahead and have a discussion about it. And absolutely, I agree with you. Like, one, the social media, just parents, please put it off as long as possible. I don't care what pressure. I know we have normalized it in our culture to give our kids phones and to give our kids social media at a young age. You got to rebel against that, because the research is pouring in about how devastating this is to their undeveloped brains and their self-worth. But also, like you said, we've got to, you know, fill our lives with positive media. Whether you're listening to good music in your home, whether you have a TED talk on and you show them, hey, I want you to watch, because my kids, they get tired of me saying like, hey, I want you to watch this church talk. I want you to watch this general conference thing, or I want you to watch this TED talk. But I will just say, hey, it's, I want you to watch just 4 minutes of this. Mm-hmm. And I won't have them watch the whole 20 minute talk. Sometimes they will, because the person is a good enough speaker, but I will show them these positive things. And I'm setting an example of that. I'm listening to good media. That right there is super huge. It's like, if you don't want your kids to watch it, then you really shouldn't be watching it. You know, I'm a believer in that now. When they were younger, I thought, okay, yeah, sometimes it's okay. But no, because as you pull yourself away from more and more negative media. And if you happen to, like, I watched R-rated movies as a teenager. And then I remember making a decision to stop. And it was a couple years where I realized how desensitized I had become to the violence and the sexuality. And I would encourage, if you as a parent think it's okay to, you know, watch whatever, step away from it for a few weeks. Already you will notice the difference of what you have just basically allowed to clutter your brain with. And if you can get rid of some of that stuff, or even just getting rid of the hours, you know, if you're a Netflix binge watcher, step away from that as much as you can, because you will see a huge difference in your life.
Wow. I'm with you. Like, just get rid of it. Just stop. And I think that it's also worth it to consider doing like a social media fast as a parent, and, you know, recognizing, like, when I did that last year, when we were encouraged by, you know, the leader of the church, prophet, to have that social media fast, I realized how many times I picked up my phone and I was like, oh wait, why am I picking up my phone? You know, it was just like a reflex. And so I do think that that's so important, to give that a chance to do like a media fast, social media fast, or anything that pulls you away.
And even if it's just a few hours, you know, it doesn't have to be a quote punishment, like, oh, my child misbehaved on social media, I'm taking it away for a week or whatever. Sometimes we just say to our kids, you know what, we're all on our phones too much. We are not going to be on our phones the rest of the night. And they, you know, and yeah, they always look at us like, what? Good. That means that tells me they especially need it. Or sometimes it's the entire weekend where we're just, hey, we're going to just take a break for the weekend. When you pull your kids away from us, especially your teenagers, when you get them away from phones and screens, you get your kid back. The attitude decreases, the rudeness decreases, the good parts of your kids come back. They turn back into kids. And that's why anything you can do on it, when you take them on a trip, you know, maybe they need it in the airplane because you're at your wit's end, but put those things away for the rest of the trip. Get your kids back, especially this summer, putting screens away, having them read books, talking to each other. I love it. I absolutely love it. You get your kids back.
So when you say that you would wait to give your kids phones until they're nearly ready to leave the house, what do you do to then prepare them to be media literate, as, you know, they might, if without having that experience, some people think that kids need to have that experience in order to develop the capacity to be in charge of their devices. So, and then handing them to them without preparing them, then they're going to leave the house and go, cool, I can do whatever I want. Yeah. So what do you do to prepare your kids to be responsible with their devices?
That's a great question. So when they're younger, if they are on a tablet of some kind, you need to be sitting there next to them. I know that sounds horrible and boring or sometimes frustrating, but that's parenting. That's the highest level. If you let your kid play a game, if you're sitting next to them reading a book, or, you know, checking the mail, whatever, you are going to give a very good idea of what they're looking at and the absolute time waster that it is. So then you kind of, again, get a good picture there. So that's as their elementary school. Middle school, if you feel like your child absolutely needs a phone, get your kid a flip phone. People sometimes say, oh, well, they're not available here. They're available. They are out there. We happen to have Verizon. I just went in and made sure the other day, because we keep having parents with questions. Yes, you can buy a flip phone for $150 and it's just texting and calling. So that's a good preparation right there. Now, if your kids are like my kids in public school, they have a ton of screen time at school, a ton. There are computers in nearly every single classroom. And when they have free time, they get to go play on the computers, and they will go to websites like Cool Math Games, which really aren't math games. It's just a secret website that a teacher will look at it and think, oh, they're doing math games. They're not doing math games. Then as they get older, now I used to say as a freshman, a smartphone was okay. not a good idea, but okay. I know that I have done that with my kids, but what I've seen again, I have different kids with different addictive levels, different concerns in their life, let's say. And I wish I hadn't. I wish I had waited till junior year. Mm-hmm. And even at junior year, that is without social media. I would wait until their senior year for social media. Now, this is the ideal. Most of us are not going to do this, unfortunately. Now, what I had done was, so I gave my son and my daughter too early. As freshmen, they had smartphones, and I wish I hadn't. Not necessarily just because they were going to go look at porn or see violent media. Honestly, it was the social media that was the worst thing. Okay. The constant scrolling, the constant comparison, this affects our kids' self-worth. The texting, you know, we had to be very specific with my daughter when she started dating, where we said, you're not going to have a texting relationship. You need to be calling people, or you want to talk to them. You need to get on the phone and call. So it's basically an extra battle that you don't need if they are with smartphones. And then mostly your sons, but also your daughters too, are going to want a lot of games on their phones. So you're going to have to monitor that. So that is something to be on top of. We have family sharing. So when my kids want a game, they have to get permission. They ask for approval. And then I have to approve every single one so that I can read through the reviews. I can look through it and see if it looks like it's going to be violent, which is always a no, or what kind of an app, right? Any app my kids want. The social media, they do need it before they leave your home, because they need to make the mistakes while they're at your home. They need to learn to say something stupid and have somebody not like it, or be rude and have somebody respond rudely back. Those things need to happen while they're still in your home. And they also need to have, again, that media literacy experience, that social media literacy experience, where they are learning, where you can have a conversation about what the adults are selling online, what the kids are selling online, and those messages that they are sending out. I'm a big believer in not allowing Snapchat. A lot of people like Snapchat. There's no point in Snapchat. It is, to me, in my opinion, an absolutely useless app. It's just pictures, right? So there's no depth. There's no conversation. There's no connectivity going on between friends and family members. It is a huge place for porn. It is a huge place for violent media. It is a huge place for people cutting themselves and sharing their pictures, sharing all kinds of, it was an app created by young men who wanted to have pictures of boobs. I mean, that was the motivation. That was the start of Snapchat. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to support that in any way. Mm-hmm. So for me, I mean, my daughter says that people don't even ask for your phone number. They ask for your Snap. And I'm like, that's too bad. I'm not giving that platform any power. Now, when she leaves my house, yes, she's welcome to get it, because she will be paying for her own phone and her own phone line for all of that. I've discussed these things many times with my kids, but that is also why when I'm paying for it and it's in my phone or in my home, excuse me, I have access to it. I have access to passwords, to everything that's going on, to their texting, to all of it. They don't have that sense of privacy because it's my phone, it's my home. And they're my child, and I know them and love them more than anybody else. And I have a right and necessity. We as parents need to be on top of what's going on in that world. So that is my recommendation for preparing them, is lots of conversations.
Yeah.
You know, some people believe in cell phone contracts and social media contracts. Some people don't. You're going to have to determine that, but they're at least worth Googling and looking up social media contract. We have one on our website in our social media guide, but there's lots of different things like that, because just creating a good discussion, they bring up so many good points in these various social media and cell phone contracts that believe me, you have not thought of all of them. Nobody has thought of all of them.
You're talking about like an agreement between parent and children.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. When I hear contract, I'm like, what? Is you sign up online? Okay. No, I get what you mean. So it's actually an agreement between the parent and child that...
Yeah. Where you're going to store phones, you're going to keep your passwords accessible to parents. You're going to behave kindly. When there is a problem, you're going to come and tell me. Again, these are some of the things that, even if you don't have your kids sign a contract per se, this is great discussion, great preparation for life that every parent needs to have with their kids.
Well, and people don't realize the full extent that social media can have on your child's future. It's about how their brains are developing and how their identity is developing, but also how they're perceived when they want to go to apply for colleges and jobs and, you know, that kind of stuff too. So it's important to keep all those things in mind. So that's That's fascinating. But I like the idea of the contract because it's establishing those boundaries up front and having that conversation, like you said. I think that that's so important. Establishing that it's my job as a parent. It's not prying. It's not, you know, you're taking away your privacy or whatever. It's my job to parent you. So that's really important.
And again, we have some parents might think, oh, well, to me, that's just, they want to fuss about that. To me, that is lazy parenting. And that's just an excuse. Oh, I don't want to invade. Any parent who has that attitude does not understand how powerful phones are. And they do not understand the world that our kids are living in. If they want to abdicate that responsibility, then they're not being a parent.
That's called permissive parenting. That's a nice way of saying it.
I would say it's near criminal to not know exactly what's going on in your kids' phones.
So they can have a totally different life online and not even be aware that everybody else has a totally separate life online. And it's scary. That whole idea is just scary. All right, Dina, thank you so much. I love this conversation. And I love the resources that you're putting out, because I just think that just having these conversations and then having a guide for how to have these conversations. I think a lot of parents, because media is so relatively new as parents, you know, I think that there's only a couple of generations of parents now that are even experiencing this as an issue. And so knowing that your resources are available is so empowering as a parent. And to your children, right? That's why it's Educate and Empower, right? I love the name. It's so applicable. I'm just so grateful. And I just encourage the listeners, go out and pick up Educate and Empower books, Conversations with My Kids, 30 Essential Family Discussions for the Digital Age, and any of the other books that they've created talking about having the 30 Days of Sex Talks, 30 Days of Stronger Child programs, and things like that are available on the website. So what is the website? What is the latest that you're promoting and sharing?
The website is educateempowerkids.org, but all of our books are available there, but they are also available on Amazon. And like you said, the Conversations with My Kids. So that has five sections to it. And one section of it is actually on technology. And so there are five discussions in there. One is about social media, but about other changing technologies, even about algorithms and AI to kind of help our kids navigate the digital world. And then we have a children's book that is really applicable to the conversation we've had today. And that's called Petra's Power to See, a Media Literacy Adventure. And in the story, Petra and her dad go through the city and they come across advertising, but they also talk about social media. They talk about a little bit about violent media and pornography, but about media messages particularly. And there's a bunch of great discussion questions that you can have with your kids. All of our books have tons of discussion questions. I'm big on great discussions. So check it out at educateempowerkids.org.
Awesome. With everything that's going on, parents need to be the ones that are guiding our children and being their mentor, being the one that coaching them through all of this. And because if we're not empowering them to understand these things, they're going to look for it elsewhere, or they're just going to dive into it blindly and get hurt. And so parents, empower yourselves to take charge and be the leaders.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this amazing episode and conversation with Dina Alexander. She's just so incredible and can talk on these amazing topics so comfortably. In this digital age that we live in, it's so important to have this knowledge on how to raise and educate our kids to be comfortable with these digital devices. And so go pick up her books. They are amazing. You can find her books on Amazon or just go to educateempowerkids.org and learn all the amazing details of the resources that Dina has available. Thank you so much for following along with this amazing podcast. I've really enjoyed every bit of this journey, even the ups and downs and trials. And I hope you'll continue to stay tuned in as we make this shift in the future to going live on Facebook on Friday afternoons in my Facebook page at facebook.com/JodyChafee. And in the future, if you don't find it there, they will be inside of my private Facebook group. So make sure to request to join that private Facebook group. Family culture strategies. So thank you so much. Please like and rate and share and do all those things that can help people to understand or to find the podcast. I really am appreciative and grateful for your feedback. So thank you again for listening. And remember that if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.